Accession number 18361, Reel 3.
Mr. Novak, Reel 3.
Yes, thank you. And so I was in technical college, and my father, and I used to work with father, you know, so I know a little bit about about bolts and nuts and turning and engines and all this and that. Anyway, you see, that they didn't take you very kindly, really. They didn't give you any influence or encouragement to that. But my father worked, as I said, he worked in the blacksmith shop, and there was a pump that was pumping water from the river up to the reservoir, or a big container, wooden container, to fill up the steam engines when they came to the on that birja, what they called, or the place of work. And it wouldn't pump water. You see, but the trouble was, so the engineer, the what they call the mechanic or the foreman, would be foreman in English, not the foreman of the works, charge of the works. He said, "The father, could you come and help with this pump, because it doesn't pump water, you see, it's blowing up something down there." But what it was, that the was too much water for the pump to pump. The water was too heavy for a pump to
lift.
So you wouldn't pump. You just got enough water, more pressure from the top than the pump could produce. So anyway, father said that you got to change all the pipe, making smaller pipes. You see, the suction pipe could be a bit bigger, but the pump pipe that is delivering water up the hill, had to pump. So he said you had to change that, and that probably will work. So anyway, he said, "That's all right, then we're going to do that." So to do that, he was driving the what they call motor horse, now the engine that works on the, like a tractor, but on the railway. He had to put all the pipes on the, we had to load them up in the other part of the works on the railway track, and take them there, further down, where the pipes got to go. But there was two shoots where the barges come in to pick up that woodwork, ballast, what they call for the mining process, I suppose it was. So it was, so they told us. And there was sidings going that, and it stopped that unloaded timber there in the barges. And the other line was going elsewhere to the works, where they cut the slippers. Anyway, what had happened, you see, he did not couple the truck to the engine. He was shunting it with the pipes. And what it was, I was with father sitting on the truck, and he was pushing it. That man, the foreman of the works, the truck was not coupled, and there was little incline going down, and the truck was getting momentum. He has left the railway. He couldn't catch him. You see, he was too slow for the truck. And I looked ahead, and I see the points were lying again to the, where they loading the barges. And there was a drop there about 30, 40 meters, I reckon. So anyway, when I saw that, I just jumped from there, I was and ran and changed the point. You know, because otherwise would go there and would crash. He would be shot. And us probably as well. So, do you know that he couldn't thank me enough, that man, that I have changed the points. He said that you saved my life, he said. And after that, You see, he gave me a better job. You see, I had a better job. He gave me put the roll, coupling the railways tracks on Birja, what they called where they work, because steam engine not always allowed to come in there. And I was doing a bit better then. It was a bit better, you know, work wise. And he was good. He gave a little bit more overtime over there. He put more hours, so he put better reference for you or for one, like that. So from my point of view, I have been better off. But the rest of them, they haven't. They've been just slaves. I was just fortunate that I went and changed those points. I mean, well, it's obvious nobody wants to do any stupid things. Whatever I would get if I didn't say it or whatever, I'd probably be in the prison still now. Because they would blame me or anybody else that, you know, that I've done it. He couldn't help it because he was driving it. That would come up after of my thinking.
What else happened to you before the Germans attacked Russia?
I was in school. Well, nothing. What do you mean by the...
Well, the Germans attacked Russia in June 1941.
I see. Yes.
Did anything else happen to you in Russia before then?
No, that was terrible shock to them. They did not expect it, that the German would strike him like that. And there was terrible things that the Germans tortured them and all things and that, and they were going to fight and all that. Well, no, they were shocked. They were absolutely shocked. They couldn't believe that. But that in that time, you see, the English government with the Polish government in England then, you see, they made a pact that was by November or December, wasn't it, that time? Or before, soon after the war, I think. I don't exactly remember the date. And then, that was 1940. I'm talking about this railway business in 1940, you see. But that we spent another winter in the Soviet Union, still in a camp in Privodino, that was stayed in Privodino till 1941, July or August, when did they start?
June,
they started war. They were shocked, but that was in that period. You see, one got established. We got the parcels from Poland. You know, a lot of people did, and we were one of them. You see, so it wasn't just. But the misery of those who haven't got it, you couldn't share with everything, with everyone, because there was not enough to share anything. People did share. And when the war broke out, they been stunned, and they asked us if we want to join the army, Red Army. And I said, if I join the Red Army, I would be a pilot, so I can get away somewhere. We didn't want to we are not Nadezhny element, we couldn't do that. I said, well, you never know. Anyway, there was a little bit relaxing, the system was relaxed a bit. But when General Sikorsky and Churchill made a pact with Stalin, you know, that so the help was coming to the Soviet Union on understanding that, you see, that they will release all the Polish people who were in the concentration camp. So when the pact was signed, the commissar from Moscow came and he gives us such a lovely speech, how we are free, we can go anywhere we like now, we are free. You can go anywhere you like. But that was the words. But in fact, you see, they only released those who they wanted to release. And whom they didn't want to release, they didn't. So, I don't know, probably 60% of a camp where I was, they were released, but another 40, maybe less, were left in the camp that autumn, beginning of autumn, you know. So, come to that. Then it was no parcels from Poland because the war. You see, whatever it was, it has been spent. And there was Russians didn't pay then because they had no money, I suppose. But they only pay you whatever they wanted to pay for the work. And they said, rest you will get because we haven't got any money. So Mom said, what are we going to do? You see, you must go, because there is no prospect for living now, because it's chaos. So we decided, the young people, we go away. We bolted away from there. So we send the advance party to Kotlas, one Monchka it was called, Monchka and somebody else. I think he went on his own to Kotlas, to Artyom. There was a Polish and English assembly point, and RTO. Railway transport officer. There was an Englishman and a Pole, because there was a lot of people coming out in Kotlas. It was the people from concentration come from Vorkuta, from Archangels, from all over the place. They concentrated to the Kotlas to go away. Any civilians from, I was surprised. Anyway, he went there and arranged meeting. So he said that we want to run away, but we're going to help. He said, we can't go just on RTO and they give you ticket or whatever. They must know something about you, don't they? I would like to meet that RTO officer who was in Kotlas in that time.
He was English?
English, only Polish, yeah. Anyway, he came down and he said, it's all arranged the day after he came. So that was 11th of October, I think it was. He came 9 or 10th of October, come back from there, because you could go free. You can go to town. You see, you don't have to ask for pass or anything, because there was, oh, we are free. They told us, you are free, so free you are. But I and my friend work in the blacksmith shop, showing the sleighs for the army. And all other people's boys were elsewhere. We arranged to go, and RTO said that you must be here 11th of October in the station in the evening, because that the train will be going. And we did. I worked with my friend in the blacksmith shop. They work in different places. We went dinner time to the canteen where we have buying food. We went to the cantora, what they call the office, to get some money to pay for the food. We got the advance money. I think they gave us 10 or 15 rubles each. We had a meal, and off we went. We left the lights in the workshop and all that. Was getting dark and cold, and the snow was going on, falling down. And all 11 of us, we went, and we fortunately managed to escape. But they chased us, the commandant, when they come up and they find out there was nobody of us in the place of work. So they came home and they said to my parents, they said, Eugene, where is he gone? Mother said, I don't know, he was working. He's not working, he said, he's nobody there. He went, Pietrik Wojtek, but his brother, he stayed with, he was with his brother, and he asked Pietrik Wojtek, where is your brother? And he says, I don't know, he's working. So they when they find out that all the young people like myself, then they were not that they knew that something's happened more than that. They've been chased us, but we were already on the station. And one of my friends said that he saw the commandant in the railway track, because they stopped the transport that time. But they didn't find us, not the one. So the train went, and that's how it started. We went free. I was on traveling all the time. We were traveling on the train, packed with people. That's where the misery will start. People were dying everywhere. Unbelievable, because they come up, all the families, they were with children and old people, they were getting older, and they were dying, virtually dying in the train. Two or three persons died every day in the track. And they've been, what they do with the people, they've been throwing them out on the roadway as they're going, train was going, they've been throwing them out, because they couldn't bury anything. I suppose that line with Polish people from Kotlas right to Tashkent or Irkutsk or whatever it is, with bodies lying all over the place.
So where were you going to go to? What were your plans?
We got a passport, pass on the Kotlas. We got the tickets, a different name. They gave us money, and they got pass. We joined the army. That's all they've been said. Join, as long as you join the army, you got that pass. So you just go.
But where was this army?
Nobody knows. You see, as the trains were going, you see that there was RTOs on every station, like in Sverdlovsk or Tashkent, big main lines. So if you get there, one get there, so you get there, and that you will get little support. You'll get the money, and they will give you instructions. Oh, you go head for Tashkent.
These were Poles, were they?
And English, yeah. The RTOs, they were English and Polish, double manned. And so anyway, it happened that all gang of us got the wrong train, and we went to Irkutsk instead of to Tashkent from Sverdlovsk. We went on the same line, but the train went to Irkutsk. So the history, the geography, as little as we could remember, as much as we could remember from schooling days, we said we are in the wrong way. My God, we stayed about two or one day on Irkutsk railway station. We didn't go anywhere. So we asked... there were trucks coming in, you know, the supply was coming in and going to the front line. I don't know which place that was not in Irkutsk. It was another station that the train stopped, and we were had nothing to eat, nothing, anything. That day. Not that day, that the next day. Anyway, I went on the railway in the station where all the good stations, and I met the soldier. You know, he was guard on there. I said to him, I said, "The tovarish," he said, "I am голодный, I'm hungry, I have nothing, never ate anything." So he says to me, "Well, come with me." And he went to the truck and he gave me a packet of biscuits, not dry bread, biscuits, and some meat, you know, in tins, the Russian one. I think I had everything by then. Anyway, I brought it all in the truck, so they were good Russians as well. I don't know. He said, "Come on," they said, I give you something. He took pity probably on me. And then we went to Tashkent. Then we joined the real transport in Tashkent. and then we went to Alma Ata, Tashkent is after. And November and December and January. And January and December, no, in December there was a Christmas in Tashkent. From Tashkent took us to Guzari, and that was my Christmas day in Guzari, place in Uzbekistan. That's where the real trouble started. The real trouble and misery and hunger, and because of the trouble, you see, then everyone was weak. And there was no food. The Uzbeks were very unkind. And there was no salt. You couldn't get salt. You couldn't get anything, really. And they sent us to work on a kolkhoz, picking up cotton wool. And I would like to stress that is the hardest work I ever done. With the hands swollen, picking up cotton wool all the time. You know, and we try to eat seeds, but if they saw you eating seeds from there, they hit you, really. Because the seeds they're making for oil, they take the seeds out from cotton wool, and separate them, and making oil and cotton wool will go for something else. Anyway, that spring came, and there was a field of onion gone. What they didn't pick up was left behind. Whatever it was, we went on picking up this onion, and we lived by the onion, really, for a couple of weeks. And the rest of that was, I'm sorry to say, that I was a thief, stealing, all of us were stealing food from the farm, going in the store, breaking in the store and taking the flour, whatever it was, or corn. I was nearly caught once.
Did you have to do this in order to survive?
In order to survive. You had to do the crime to survive. But today it's really shame. But there was nothing. You just one grows up. It's not only that, but the fear of it. You see, if Uzbek caught you, then he would kill you. Kill one on the spot for that. What could one do?
How would they kill you?
Would you just stab you? Or if they didn't kill you, they would give you to the Russian commissar, and because that the Uzbeks are Muslims, you see, and they anti-Christians anyway, and once one is white, they assume it's Christians, and that was one way to get rid of one. But they we've had, not in place where I was, it didn't happen, but talking to people, you know, there were incidents that they did dispose of people.
But you were at Gulzarai, at a place called Gulzarai?
Guzari, yes. That is just outside between Alma Ata. No, Tashkent, and now I got muddled. I think it's Tashkent, between Tashkent and Samarkand.
Bukhara,
yes. And the people traveling there, you know, here and there, wandering. And if you get to Bukhara, the river called
Amudarya.
That was the place. And they were building this dam, didn't they? They've been building dam that time. And if they catch anybody there, they send to the Amudarya to build the dam, working there. And I joined the Polish army then.
At Guzari?
Guzari, yes. In March. No, February. in February, all we only lost one, that Stan, I thought of his name, Zaremba. Zaremba died of typhus, C. died, poor Stan. And all 10 of us, we joined the army in Guzeri. And I odd enough, before 2 days, I went to Persia. We went to Persia with the army. I met my parents. And they were left in Kotlas. I met them there. I met mom and all the family. And I had to go back to the camp to get the ticket that I was in the army. And I still got it somewhere there. My wife probably knows where it is. Any part of it. I had a ticket stamped that I was in the army, started to serve in the army, and was stamped. And I hurry up back from the camp to Guzeri, where my parents were, and give them that ticket. And on that ticket, they come out. Because the army personnel of the families had the priority to leave the camp. That was, I left in March, and they went in June or July after that. They went to Tehran.
You went to Persia in March?
Yes, I was in Pahlavi. The Palm Sunday was on the, I forgot the boat now. I got the name somewhere there, but I don't remember the boat. There was a tanker, oil tanker. We come from Krasnovodsk to Pahlavi on that tanker. And Palm Sunday was on the boat, and Easter was in Pahlavi. We had the disinfecting, the lysing, the cleaning, the all the lot. Come out as clean as a whistle.
How did you feel when you reached Persia?
Heaven? Delighted. All of us. We were free. Really? Yes. It's difficult to describe now. When you look back, it's sad. You squeeze the tears out of one eye, really. That's the faith of all these things happening, one thing that is all finished, but it's not. It's not. The life is, it's amazing how faith is important in life. Without faith, I wouldn't be here today.
What condition were you in by the time you got to Pahlavi?
I was about 50 kilos. No more than 50 kilos.
Were you sick?
Fortunately, no. I had a touch of when I was in Guzeri, I've had a touch of fever of some sort, but I get about probably typhus or something. But I just broke through to that. You know, it's something that I was very sick, but no more than one day. And I,